WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome, and good evening. Thank you for tuning in to Monday Night Talk. Actually, thank you for keeping your radio dial set here for this radio program to close out your Monday. Hope your day went well. We're going to look to provide you with some great conversation for the next 2 hours. My name is Kevin Tachi. I will serve as your host. We will start our program. We'll officially kick it off right after our final check of the roadways, highways, and the byways. We'll do our State House report. Our lawmaker, our legislator this week is State Senator Susan Moran. She'll be joining us. A couple of things that we will be discussing will be her work, along with other legislators, to get teachers vaccinated. That, of course, is going to be happening in just a couple of days. It'll happen this week where teachers can actually go in and get the shot, whether they get the Moderna, the Pfizer, or the Johnson & Johnson. It will happen, so our teachers will be better protected. We'll also talk with her about some landmark legislation that she has signed on for, actually is leading the charge with regards to child care. Also, her work when it comes to Comcast. She was one of many lawmakers, legislators, who actually sent a letter off to Comcast saying, hey, if you could you refrain from putting a data cap on, you know, businesses or on individuals who may exceed their monthly use? And also don't install those rate hikes that you were going to put in place. We'll talk with her about doing that as well. Following her, we can talk a little bit about the 26th annual Plymouth Rotary Auction. It's going to be a little bit different this year. Now, it's normally you can kind of watch it live on the weekends. It's live now. It's been live since March 1st. And we're going to speak with Kim Mio, who is not only producing this for PAC TV, but she's also a Rotarian. Also, the Rotarian's new president-elect, Dr. Gary Maiesta. We'll talk with him about what is going on with the Rotary this year, as it's going to be taking place for the rest of this week, right up until Sunday. Sunday, actually, they will have a live event from 2 to 8 p.m. We'll get all the details about that in just a few moments. And then we're doing a special one-hour conversation. Maybe you have or have not heard about this item. It's about a controversial issue, about a flag, a peace flag, that was asked to be taken down in a Halifax elementary school classroom, a series of classrooms. Now, you don't know what peace flag I'm talking about. This is it's almost like an LGBTQ flag, but they also have human flesh tones that are also part of the coloring with a peace symbol. Well, this became the source of a conversation about whether it should be up. I believe last Monday night, the school committee met, had a conversation, and then gave out a decision on it. We're going to speak with Lana Eldridge. She's the mother of a fifth grade student who actually put together a petition. Speak with Evan Smith, who also is a parent of a Halifax elementary student, actually I'm correct, I believe that he actually has a student who went to the elementary schools, kind of grown out of the system, but nonetheless, he's a taxpayer. And then Jay Klein, he is a senior at Silver Lake High School, actually organized a series of standouts. We're going to talk about this particular issue. So that's coming up in just a few moments. But right now, time first to find out what's happening out on the roadways one final time. Being brought to you on this end by Brennan's Smoke Shop. Online at brennansmokeshopma.com with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Wayneham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and Weymouth.
Well, thanks, Kevin. The expressway southbound's all clear from top to bottom. You're looking at about 11 minutes there. Northbound is an easy 10-minute drive from Braintree to Boston. Routes 3 South and 24 South are both in good shape, heading down to Route 44. And 93 South, that's moving, 93 is moving along in either direction between Braintree and Boston. This report is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. This week at Whole Foods Market, get sustainable, wild-caught, previously frozen sockeye salmon fillets for $11.99 a pound through March 9th, plus an extra 10% off for Prime members while supplies last. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
I'm amazed at the number of you here in the Commonwealth that aren't aware of the tobacco flavor ban. All flavored vape and tobacco products are banned from being sold here in Massachusetts, including menthol. It's okay. You can always go to New Hampshire or stop by one of our 9 locations and pick up some flavored CBD hemp wraps. Grape, pineapple, watermelon, strawberry. That's right, we have a huge selection of full-spectrum CBD hemp wraps. It's just another example of our American ingenuity. Oh, and a very special thank you to Speaker of the House Robert DeLeo for 30 years on Beacon Hill. May your greatest achievement be sending billions of Massachusetts taxpayer dollars to New Hampshire. Billions of dollars for their infrastructure, their roads, their police and firefighters, etc., etc.,
etc., etc. Count them, etc., etc.
Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and now on Bridge Street in North Weymouth. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts. Flavored CBD hemp wraps, dudes.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We officially begin our evening with the State House Report. State House Report gives our local legislators an opportunity to chat about some of the things that they are doing on our behalf up at the State House. Joining us for this conversation today is none other than State Senator Susan Marin. Senator, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Thanks, Kevin. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you here to kind of talk about some things that I think we've talked about in the past, and even some efforts that I love hearing that, you know, that there are people who are up on Beacon Hill fighting for the little person. Whether it's somebody who works in the local coffee shop to the guy who's behind the microphone, that there's somebody who is up there for our interest, not their own self-interest, which is fantastic.
That's why I really ran, and appreciate the voters having confidence in me to continue to do that. So thank you.
So the first conversation, you know, this, I'm sure that the great folks who are working in the news department at this moment they're up to their eyebrows in COVID. And we start our conversation talking about COVID and your efforts to get vaccines for local teachers. As school starts to reopen, as they're talking about going from remote and hybrid to fully in person, talk to me about what you've had to do, you and your colleagues have had to do, to be able to protect our educators.
Well, this is an issue that's close to my heart. My daughter taught fourth grade. I am intimately familiar with, you know, what a 24/7 job teaching can be. People become teachers because they just are drawn to it, and they are really 100% into having each child be the best that that child can be. And so when I heard from teachers that they were looking forward to getting back away from hybrid learning and really back into 100% full-time, really the way it was before COVID as best as possible. But they really wanted to be having the same opportunities as first responders in terms of let us get vaccinated so we don't have to worry about bringing COVID back to our families, since we're going to, by definition of just being with more people in full-time learning, we're going to be exposed more, and that's okay. These folks are their own, their own kinds of heroes. During COVID, they've had to learn new technologies. They've had to navigate things that have come up with kids and families and parents trying to juggle themselves with computers and sharing technology. And the teachers have really been that constant source of confidence for learning. And so I, along with other colleagues, wrote a letter to Governor Baker and also the Secretary Sutters, who's handling, she's essentially the COVID czar here, and really wanted to persuade them that the teachers should have a consideration so that we could get back to full-time school. It's important for the economy so that people are back working. It's important for students to be able to have that access to learning.
And I think a part of that letter also asked for the consideration of the Johnson & Johnson one-shot vaccination. How important is that?
Well, the fact that there will be more vaccine availability, just to doing the math, it shows that there is more capacity in the system coming up. And the other thing in terms of education, it has particularly hit women hard. And since this is Women's History Month, I just wanted to remark that, women have, long struggled to maintain equal salary, equal opportunities for jobs. And COVID in particular has had a lot of women leaving the workforce. So that's just one more consideration in getting teachers vaccinated and getting kids back to school as early as we can.
Yeah, the letter, of course, calling for 72,000 public school teachers across the Commonwealth to be able to get vaccinated. I know that yourself, Representative Patrick Kearney, Senator Michael Brady, Representative Howard Vanna, just to name a few who were involved in pushing that letter across the finish line. And in just a couple of days, I believe the governor has announced that teachers will be able to get in line to be vaccinated. So that's a victory right there, is it not?
It really is. And it's wonderful when your advocacy actually turns into a policy that people need and really appreciate.
Interesting. You mentioned during, our discussion of the vaccinations, it is Women's Month. And also knowing that women have been impacted, I think, the most when it comes to this pandemic. You have actually helped lead the way for a landmark child care legislation. And I might add, according to the information here, you're the sole woman co-sponsor to help in regards to being able to get child care. Because women are the ones who have actually had lost the most when it comes to employment, especially when it comes to their family.
Absolutely. So as far as the Senate bill, it's 1307. It's the Common Start Bill. I am co-sponsor with Senator Lewis, who is co-chair of the Joint Legislative Committee on Education. And this is the most landmark legislation since universal health care. In fact, it's been called universal child care. And that in and of itself is going to be an incredible economic engine to further young families' careers, to really look at early intervention in terms of kids who need attention in one way of learning or another. This is going to do a lot for our young families' lifestyle. It's going to do a lot for our communities so that they are sustainable with folks with living wages who add to our communities.
What are some of the things that this particular measure will look to tackle if in fact it is signed into law?
So it's very practical. For young kids from birth through five, it provides subsidized health care for families that are below 50% of statewide median income, and it allows families at higher incomes to pay no more than 7%. That's not something we have right now. And it also includes children from ages 5 to 12 to have after school care, and special needs kids sustaining that same care through the age of 15.
Is there any language in there in regards to setting any kind of new salary guidance or something that's going to be able to help retain those folks who have children?
Well, that's the goal of the bill is focused on the child care industry. So what it does right now is, as we in our community have child care, it costs about per year the same as UMass Amherst College to just to be able to go to work and be able to feel like your children are home safe. So the as far as the increased salary, there is a component for child care providers to really receive support from their employers to add to their education, to add to their salary, so that they have more of a living wage along the lines of closer to public school teachers. And that's something right now, it's been a very low wages. And so it will also bring the industry up to more sustainable salaries.
How receptive have your colleagues been to this this legislation?
Well, you know, everyone I've spoken with, it's 100% a no-brainer in terms of, if you think about when the way that universal health care has been successful, and a lot of people who wouldn't otherwise be able to afford insurance or have good insurance behind them so that they could take better care of their health, it's a similar circumstance. When, you know, we spoke earlier about women not being able to get to their, you know, during COVID, not to get to their jobs, having to stay home. This is going to support women going forward so that they have opportunities that they don't have now, because their mind is just not distracted about their kids being in good hands and really learning to their potential.
Is it accurate also to note that is this bill something that's been filed both in the Senate and the House?
Yes, it sure has. Absolutely.
How does that make you feel, knowing that this is something that it isn't just going to be something that goes along in the Senate and we have to wait and see what happens in the House, that you're going to have both of these pieces of legislation hopefully going parallel and making their way through committee and hopefully, you know, finding its way under the governor's desk eventually?
Yes, it's more hands on the task is the way I look at it. And I'm excited to work with our House partners. This is something that we've already had tremendous wave of support coming our way. And this is something the community needs now. And it's exactly what we need for economic recovery coming out of COVID.
You're just tuning in. We're speaking with State Senator Susan Moran. She's my guest, part of the State House report that we have here every week on Monday night to talk a final piece of conversation. I think you and I have talked about this before, and this is more or less a follow-up. And this is in regards to one of our cable providers. Well, actually, I say cable providers because they do more than do that. They also provide phone and internet. We're talking about Comcast. It's been rumored that they were going to push for data caps and rate hikes. And I believe that you're one of a group of state legislators who have actually pushed for them to do something other than ask for those hikes and put those caps in place.
Yeah, that was actually a very great success, because once Comcast heard that the Senate was moving to tie their hands on those rate hikes, they agreed to, based upon the situation of COVID, to keep the rate hikes in advance for the next 2 years. And, you know, this is our lifeline right now. We're on Zoom right now. A lot of kids are still in school on Zoom, and we certainly appreciate that, you know, Comcast recognized this situation. And, you know, there's more to be done. One of my new pieces of legislation is a review of the way that our private information is being sold on the internet and otherwise. And I'm having, if it's successful, we'd be able to look at that and put basically a tax in trust so that we can have more municipal broadband resources. So the communities will be able to sustain dependable connectivity for whether they need a business, family, or school.
That's fantastic. And how is that being met by your colleagues, that piece of legislation?
Well, we were just having sign-ons for other senators coming up, and I expect that that'll be something that most people see as a need right now and where we should be going. That's kind of the upside of COVID. We've learned a lot.
Have you had conversations with some of your colleagues in regards to cable providers, you know, taking advantage of times that we're going through to seek to fill their coffers even more? I mean, they're making a lot of money. If anybody has paid a cable bill, it's not cheap by any means. But to put a data cap in place and look to raise rates is kind of greedy and egregious.
Yeah, it's very predatory at this point in time. And you've got to realize there are a lot of areas where it's a monopoly. This is not a space where consumers always have the choice to look at another provider and to price compare. So we were, you know, very happy that Comcast, you know, saw the error in their ways and went back and just stood with the, you know, the current schedule, which they already make a fair profit.
One would think the breakup of Ma Bell back in the late 70s to disband any kind of monopoly or try to find a way to keep it from becoming a monopoly would be something that would be sustainable. But it seems as though we're seeing more and more monopolies these days because there's not that much competition.
Right. And, you know, I've got to credit Maura Healey. The Attorney General has been really on it. She's got an incredible smart force of attorneys, and she is out there watching, and she's a very good partner to work with in that regard.
Senator, anything you want to say in closing? And I mean, dealing with, you know, this pandemic and you know, here we are, you're probably somewhere right in the full throes of not only filing your bills and getting your bills ready to be heard, but also, you know, you get a budget to start putting together in a short amount of time too.
We're incredibly busy, but one of the most important things, in fact, the most important thing we do is constituent services. So we are at Cordage Park. Monica Mullen is our our constituent services director. Please call us if you need something. Don't wait until you can't get your unemployment or can't figure out your PPP benefits. Ask us. We'll set you in the right direction. So happy to be of service and do the best we can. The whole legislative constituency is great to work with, and we work very well together.
And if we want to end things on a positive note, here we are. We're in March, and we're that much closer to spring, right?
That's right. So there is a lot of hope.
Yes. State Senator Susan Moran has been our guest. And again, as she says, if you are somebody who is in her district, specializes in constituent services, please definitely reach out to her. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, of course, there's going to be more Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
Dad, you think UFOs will ever come?
Well, I'm not sure they've ever been invited.
Can we invite them?
Yeah, but how?
Well, we've got a flat roof and Christmas light strings. We can spell out UFOs land here.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll hold the ladder for you.
Later that night, there arose such a clatter.
Dad, look out on the lawn! A UFO with a broken windshield!
Wow, better call Tiny and Sons. They'll replace that windshield and insurance pays.
Do space aliens have insurance?
Oh, they wouldn't leave home without it.
I'm Peter Brown from Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. Our service is out of this world. Just call 1-888-64-TINYS. And thank you.
Hey, it's John Shea here from Almost Famous Radio, introducing you to independent bands and musicians from across New England, brought to you by Tiny and Sons Glass. Tomorrow night, another full show in store for you. We have tons of new music, and yes, even some shows to let you know about. Plus, we'll be joined on the Tiny stage by singer-songwriter Jennifer Teft. That's tomorrow, 8 to 10, right here on 95.9 WATD and 95.9WATD.com.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we return for more Monday Night Talk here on 95.9WATD. And I have to tell you, this is my favorite time of year. Not because spring is all right around the corner, but what is actually ongoing as we speak right now is the Plymouth Rotary Auction, the 26th annual Plymouth Rotary Auction. Yeah, it might be a little different because of COVID, but it's still happening. Joining us right now is Kim Mio. She is the director of community media at PAC TV. We want to thank you, Kim, for being here.
Very happy to be here.
As well as Dr. Gary Maestas. He is the president-elect of the Plymouth Rotary. Doctor, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Hey, Kevin, thank you so much for having us.
No, I'm a fan of the Rotary. I mean, I feel bad because I still have a gift certificate that I bid on last year and won. I swear I'm going to get out to that steakhouse. I think it was Rio Steakhouse. Yeah. And I actually got it was a $40 gift card that I'm hoping one day to get out and enjoy. I think we should probably talk about how things are going with the auction, knowing that this is going to be running until the 14th. Is that correct, Gary?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, it's a very different auction for us. This is the 26th annual, and the previous 25 auctions were the typical auction, you know, and this is, you know, started by, you know, Doug McLeod and some of our early Rotarians, where they really wanted to engage the community and have a lot of items and do this, you know, 2.5 day auction on PAC TV. And it's actually just morphed over the years to just be this fantastic event that engages all the families of the auction and friends of Rotary. It's just kind of had to change because of COVID. So this is the 26th annual, and it is so different than anything that we've done. It's because we have so many limits with COVID, and we want to be very respectful of keeping people healthy. And so what we've done is we've partnered with an online service called Bidding Owl. And Bidding Owl has done a number of Rotary auctions around the country, and we chose to partner with them to bring these items and our fundraising efforts to the public.
And it's worth noting that Kim was actually telling me before, during the break, that she's actually a Rotarian herself. But you were actually kind of talking up the Bidding Owl and what kind of a great component it is to the auction.
Really surprised us all. We really weren't sure how this year was going to turn out, and people were nervous for change. But Bidding Owl has shown us that it started March 1st, and it's open for 2 weeks, and it'll end on March 14th at the live portion at PAC TV. And it's been really impressive. They organize it by categories. You can just click, 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 and it's fun to just sit there and go, oh, I want that, I want that, I want that. And people are so far really responding really well to it.
So I would ask, you know, I believe that you're going to be the producer of this event on the 14th. Is that correct, Kim?
Yes. So on the 14th, what we've done is we really still wanted to have some kind of a live component because the community and the Rotarians have come to really cherish this weekend. And because of COVID, we had to really make some hard choices this year to keep everybody safe. We decided that we would kind of stagger a couple presenters and still have a live portion. We're going to showcase a lot of the items. We're going to showcase some of our big ticket items, and the bidding will end later that evening, so people can bid all day long. You can bid on your phone, you can bid on your computer, and still watch the live portion. And that's going to be interspersed with different testimonials from people about the importance of Rotary, the camaraderie, the friendships, and how much Rotary impacts the community. It's also going to showcase where these funds go, which is a really important part. All the money from the auction goes right back into the community. So we're going to be able to showcase some of those stories, where it goes, how it impacts. And it's pretty touching, actually.
If you will, Gary, talk to us about the importance of what Rotary does when it comes to being the very fabric of the community.
Well, you know, one of the things that we focus on in Rotary is our theme of service above self. And one of the things that we have really tried to do in my, I mean, I've only been on for 12 years. We have some people that have been Rotarians for close to 50 years. And we really take a look at what the needs are in the community. And we try to fill the voids that are out there. You know, we have a, you know, testimonial about scholarships. I mean, we give scholarships every year to both high schools. We give dollars and funds to organizations throughout the community that need assistance. And we've done projects around the world, actually. So we've contributed to really compelling, you know, acts of kindness and acts of giving back. So, you know, I think it's one of the things that, you know, we raise some, you know, good amount of money, but, you know, it's important for the community to know that everything we raise goes right back into Plymouth and the surrounding communities that we support through Rotary.
Now, I'll ask both of you this question is, what are some of the things, have you had a chance to take a look at some of the items that are up for bidding at this particular time and may or may not be available up until the 14th?
Go ahead, Gary.
Well, you know what, there are so many. You know, there's the traditional African safari that comes up every year, and that's a great take. We have a number of estate planning options that it seems like there are certain segments of the you know, bidding population that really look forward to some of these traditional things. But we also have a new item that and this is near and dear to me. You know, one of our students in Plymouth, a North High School senior, started a baking company out of his parents' kitchen, and he's a registered business in Plymouth. He does banana bread, and it's called Nana's Nolan's Nana's Banana Bread. And he does these, it's like this explosion of popularity across, and he's donated a gift basket of $200 worth of baked pumpkin bread, other baked goods that he will customize for the lucky winner of that particular bid. So I think there are so many iconic type of bidding. And I'll just add one more, and Kim, I'm probably taking all yours, but one of the things that we did this year, which was you know, an idea from Andrew Carter, from one of our Rotarians, he had this idea that, you know, we do get sponsors every year for Rotary. What if we took a portion of that donation? So typically our sponsors are $500. We took $100 of that sponsorship donation, and we left it up to the donor to pick restaurants in Plymouth that they would support going and getting gift cards so that we could auction off gift cards to help, you know, our restaurants get back on their feet to really kind of drum up some business. But that's, you know, Kevin, those are four really great things that we have to look forward to. And as you said earlier, you know, get one of these good restaurant gift cards to go out and enjoy yourself when you can.
Kim, do you want to chime in? Do you have anything that you've seen or that you're aware of?
I definitely do. So you can get to the Bidding Owl site through the PlymouthRotaryAuction.com website. And if you were to just happen to go to Bidding Owl, you can search for Plymouth Rotary and you'll see our auction. And you can just click by, I'm just on it right now, looking through some of the categories, and we have amazing gift baskets. There's a whole boating section with different things. There's camps for kids. There's pet services and lots of restaurants and dining, which is fabulous. And I love the gift card thing as well, because those gift cards were purchased from local restaurants that really need the help right now. Mm-hmm. So it was like a win-win.
Yeah.
There's golf and family fun and vacations and tours and just all kinds of stuff. And one that I happened to bid on right before we got on, because I wanted to be ready. And I don't want to tell anyone because I don't want to give my bid up, but it's Success Coach Mentoring for Adults by a Dr. Gary Meyer. And I was like, I didn't even know that was there until I was prepping for this. And so I went and put a bid, but no one can outbid me. So
there you go. Right now, we got to get that bid up. Yeah, we got to get that bid up, Kevin. Come on, we're going to drum that up.
I definitely agree. I might actually, after the radio show tonight, I might actually go and throw a bid in myself.
Now, Kevin, come on. You can't outbid me. You also can, if you want to just out and out buy an item and don't want to deal with people outbidding you, you can just go ahead and like buy it. I forget what it's called, but that's another option. And we also have a donate button, which is... where if you don't want to make a bid, but you just want to go ahead and make a donation, we decided that would be a good thing too, because so many people just want to give and support the community and support Rotary.
Yeah, and if you're just tuning in, we're talking about the 26th annual Plymouth Rotary Auction. It's a bit different this year, but you know what? It's a lot of fun. And as you're already here, we're kind of teasing some of the things that you can check out through Bidding Owl. Get Dr. Gary Maestas joining us. He is the president-elect to the Plymouth Rotary. We have Kim Mio, and she is the director of community media, and she will be, I believe, producing this very, very event. The one thing that I enjoy about the Rotary, not only just how it's put together, it's, you know, you get such a great team of people, whether it's volunteers, whether it's the great staff at PAC TV, whether it's some of the great folks who actually show up, other than Gary, other than Kim, you'll have, you know, Vinny DiMacito or Ollie show up, or Matt Muratori, or even some guy named Rob Hakala. I mean, you've got all kinds of folks who show up to be a part of it. Will we have any guest appearances come this coming weekend?
The one thing, again, with COVID this year, we really had to restrict the number of people in the building, because we do have our PAC TV staff there as well. So we kind of had to stagger and really slim down on the number of people. So we're having two presenters each hour, and then a couple of helpers in another room kind of showcasing the Bidding Owl items. So this year is going to be a little different, and we hope to expand to that in the future years. But we're so far, Bidding Owl's worked out well. One more item I think we should probably highlight is a couple of WATD hours donated. And I'm actually not quite sure what you get with that, Kevin. Maybe you could give us some information.
I don't know, but if they wanted to, I'm not sure if that might be to hang out with Rob and Lisa on the South Shore's Morning News.
Ooh.
5 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Monday through Friday. It may be that. It may be sit in with Liz Raven from 2 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. I don't know. Or maybe they could sneak in and hang out with me on Monday Night Talk from 6
p.m. There you go. That's the one.
That is the one. That's the moneymaker right there. No, but you can't even promise that Steve Trifletti might be there as one of the guest presenters, or is it just some of the staff doing the presenting this year?
No, it's all Rotarians, but Steve Trifletti might make an appearance on one of our very special testimonials.
Oh, that's fantastic. And how do you feel, Gary, how important are the testimonials to, you know, folks understanding what it is, what Rotarians do and their importance in the community?
Well, you know, it's important for the community to hear from people that actually have been impacted by the Rotary, not only as a participant of Rotary, but some of the experiences and the impact that they have realized over the years. You know, it's just wonderful to go to a Rotary meeting and hear all the great things that are happening in our community, but it's also important to see how Rotarians are helping to inspire some good things for the communities in Plymouth and surrounding communities. So it's just the testimonials for me are, you know, just it's like an encouragement of why do we want to focus on others other than ourselves. So it's almost a reminder that, you know, we do a lot of stuff, but we want to impact others more than we want to impact ourselves. So, and I think that's kind of that unwritten message that we have with everything we do. And I know with the auction, we really haven't, you know, that doesn't lead, that's not the theme that goes out there. And but really the underpinning of everything we do at Rotary is how do we give back? And those testimonials are key to demonstrating how the Rotary is helping to do that.
Yeah, for folks who may want to tune in this coming Sunday from 2 to 8 p.m., how can they do that? Is there a channel guide if folks want to be able to tune in their community?
Yes, absolutely. We're going to be going live on our public channel, which is Comcast 13, Verizon 43, which is also going to be going live in Marshfield from their community access station, and Area 58, which is Carver, Plimpton, and Halifax. And then we'll also be going live on PAC-TV's streaming channel, PACTV.org/live. And we're going on live on Rotary's Facebook and Rotary's YouTube page. And all the information is on the Rotary's auctions website, which is PlymouthRotaryAuction.com.
You know, what's interesting is that there's no excuse for someone to tune into the auction, because you're offering it on so many different avenues, whether it's in Marshfield, whether it's Carver, Plimpton, or online. I think it's fantastic.
You know, one of the great features that we've realized this year with having an online presence is the auction is live 24 hours a day for 14 days. And that's one of the things that is really working for us. And we've seen a great turnout online to actually go on, take a look at things, people registering. So I think it's a new thing for us. And, you know, this will be how things run from this point on. I think it's been a big change for us, but I think people are embracing it. And we hope our bidders embrace it and keep bidding and bid often.
Gary, how important is the partnership with PAC-TV? Because it seems so there's a great symbiotic relationship when it comes to this annual event.
Well, you know, PAC-TV is masterful at communicating. And one of the things that we feel very strong about is how do we get the word out to the community? How do you and not only how we get it out, but how well is it done? And those two features are perfect for what PAC-TV's mainstay has been for many, many years. And I've been in the Plymouth community for 21 years, and PAC-TV has been lock and step with all these avenues that we, you know, 20, it's a 26-year partnership with the beginnings of, you know, communicating how we can support our community through Rotary and the Rotary auction. So what a great partnership. And they've been tireless. And Kim, I just have to say that Kim has really been the key figure behind all of this for us.
Well, thanks, Gary.
You're welcome.
And congratulations to you, Kim, your executive director, Julie Thompson, Donna Rodriguez, Michelle, Dustin. There's so many people to name over there at PAC-TV. I'll end up missing somebody, but best of luck on this broadcast coming up this Sunday. Anything we haven't mentioned as we close up this segment, Kim, that you want to touch upon real quick?
I just think it's going to be a really heartfelt event, and I really appreciate everyone watching and contributing to, and all the sponsors and all the people who have donated items. We just want to thank everyone. It's such an incredible community event, really, and we're really proud to be part of it.
Dr. Maestas, I want to thank you also for coming on. Anything you want to say as we close and wrap up this particular segment?
Yeah, Kevin, thank you again for having us. But I do want to, you know, share my thoughts with the community to let them know that, you know, COVID is upon us, but we are strong, we are diligent, and we are committed. And the Rotary auction has continued, it will continue. We have morphed. We have taken advantage of technology. We've taken advantage of the will of our Rotarians to really shape this Rotary auction into something different. But yet the impact is still the same. is still the same. So I want to thank the community of Plymouth, WATD, for allowing us to actually take a moment of your radio, a valuable time to share this information.
Yeah, I've been speaking with Dr. Gary Maestas and Kim Mio, talking about the Plymouth Rotary, the 26th annual Plymouth Rotary auction coming up. Well, actually, it's live for the rest of this week, and the live program itself next Sunday, 2 to 8 p.m. Make sure you check it out. That'll do it for the first hour of Monday Night Talk. We will step aside, and when we come back in a few moments, hour number two of Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WAPB. Stay tuned.
WBMS Brockton, the South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. WATD, streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Do you check your Google search results regularly? You should. People often get their first impression of you or your business online. Negative comments on the internet can impact your life and your livelihood. Take control of your online reputation. Get your free reputation report card at reputationdefender.com. It may reveal negative posts from an ex-employee, upset patient or client, news article, legal issue, or even exposed personal information right there in your Google search results. Uncover what's lurking on the internet about you with reputationdefender.com's patented scan and get your free reputation report card. Or for immediate assistance with your reputation, call 800-401-6681. Our cutting-edge technology helps make your Google search results look their best. Call 800-401-6681. That's 800-401-6681. 800-401-6681. Or take the free scan at reputationdefender.com.
Go ahead, indulge yourself. Every Wednesday night, tune in to Talk with Francesca and join me for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration. So sit back and relax, or be stimulated, or both. Because being connected feels good. It's contagious, and I personally want to spread it around.
Don't miss Talk with Francesca, Wednesday nights at 9 on 95.9 WATD.
Smart investing for smart people. Sponsored by Merrill Guided Investing. How important is a will when it comes to your finances? Here's CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger.
Without a will, a durable power of attorney, and a healthcare proxy, these documents, if you don't have them, it leaves a big mess for your family.
Merrill Guided Investing. Visit MerrillLynch.com/investing goals. Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner, and Smith Incorporated. Both a registered broker-dealer and investment advisor. Member SIPC.
Two chocolate chip muffins coming in. Thank you.
Indeed knows unexpected growth can stretch your business thin.
Hey, can someone get that?
Like at Claire's Cafe. To satisfy demand for takeout, she needs to get started hiring right away.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. And the moment you sponsor a job on Indeed, you get a short list of quality candidates from our resume database. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get a $75 credit for your first sponsored job post. Terms and conditions apply.
The People's Truth, a show dedicated to bringing communities together and keeping the truth alive. Join your host, me, Benny Rabbi, as we talk with businesses, organizations, and people around New England and the world in search of the People's Truth. Join us tonight at 9 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
In the year 2020, a powerful replica of the Vietnam Wall in Washington, D.C.,
will be permanently displayed at the Veterans Memorial Bicentennial Park in Fall River for veterans, families, and visitors from our local area, as well as all of Massachusetts and Rhode Island. The wall will honor the men and women who made the heroic and ultimate sacrifice in Vietnam. Help us make this very special memorial a reality. Please visit VietnamMemorialWall.org.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we return for hour number two of Monday Night's Talk. This is going to be a one-hour segment. Normally, we try to have out the hour, but this is an important issue, an important conversation. Whether you agree or disagree, doesn't matter. It's just a matter this is something that's happening in our backyard. While it's only in one community, it could be a conversation that's being had in another. Decision was made about a week ago by the Halifax School Committee regarding allowing peace flags to be hung in classrooms in the town's elementary school. Now, joining us for this particular discussion is Lana Eldridge. He's the mother of a fifth-grade student. Evan Smith is also a parent of a Halifax Elementary student. And Jay Klein, a senior at Silver Lake High School, who actually organized standouts for the peace flags in Halifax. Everybody, welcome to the conversation, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Kevin, I have just one quick thing to clarify. My son is actually not a current Halifax Elementary School student. He's 21 years old, but went through all of his elementary school years there. He's openly gay, and I am kind of an LGBT advocate, and so got involved in that capacity.
Okay, so as a resident, you were compelled. So basically, because the first thing I was going to ask right out of the gate was, to the best of your knowledge, how did this controversy over the peace flag begin? How did you hear about it? So, I mean, Evan, how did you actually hear about it?
Yeah, so we had some people at the school kind of confidentially reach out to us. My wife and I are pretty public on social media about being LGBT allies since our son came out to us several years ago. And it's, we get a lot of people who reach out on issues that relate to that. And so we were told about what had happened at the school, that the teachers had these peace flags up for several weeks. And for your listeners, I don't know if they are familiar with what the peace flag is, but it's a multicolored, it's like basically a rainbow flag where the stripes have been turned vertically instead of horizontally, and they've added some flesh tone colors also to the left of the flag. So it's meant to be inclusive of all sexualities, genders, races, cultures, everything. And it has the word peace written across the front of it. We were told that those flags had been up, the teachers put them up, and the students liked them being up, and they were up for several weeks, and then they were forced to be taken down because another flag had been asked to be displayed as well. So that was just a confidential reach out that we had heard from people at the school.
And that was my next question you already answered, because I was going to ask, why is this flag so special? So thank you for giving that outline as to the specificity of that particular flag. Lana, give us, you do have a student who is in the elementary school, correct?
I do, yes. My son Charlie is in the fifth grade at the elementary school.
And so I'm sure it was something he came home and was telling you about, or was it something you saw on social media? How did you hear about this?
So I had actually been off of social media for about 6 years. So I had a friend reach out to me to make sure that I knew what was going on. So I had asked Charlie about it, and he said, yeah, Mom, these flags were hanging up in all of the fifth and sixth grade classrooms. And at the time, it was maybe a week prior, they had been asked to take them down because another student asked to have another flag hung. And to, I guess, in an attempt to avoid controversy, they were just told to take all of the flags down.
And then we have Jay. Now, Jay, you're a high school student. Tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you hear about this?
Yeah, I am a high school student. I'm a senior at Silver Lake. So I don't exactly know all of the details of what goes on at Halifax Elementary. But I also don't use Facebook a ton. So my mom was actually the one that informed me of what was happening, because she was, following along, because we have a lot of friends in this community, which in turn helped me to spend a little more time figuring out what was happening, hearing all sides of the story, and reaching out where I could and organizing what I could to help out.
Okay. So I guess reports say that as you have said, that parents want that you wanted to put your flag up, but the flags were already up. And then there were other parents who were saying, we want to put another flag up. What's the other flag? There are other flags in play here that want to be, that parents are asking to also have hung up. Is that correct? Well, I'll ask Lana. Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah. One of the sixth graders actually in the classroom had requested that the thin blue line flag be added to the classroom. As his father is a police officer, he felt politically marginalized was the term that they used, with the peace flag being hung up. So they wanted equal representation in the school, apparently.
Right. Yeah, the superintendent had sent out an email after this hit social media and kind of got out there about, because they got so many emails from parents in response. The superintendent and the principal and school committee chair got just flooded with emails about parents who were upset that these flags got removed. And she said in that email that the reason the principal took the action he did was because the other kids were feeling politically marginalized by not having the opportunity to have the thin blue line flag be up in class as well. And there's a little bit of a history on the thin blue line flag in our town. Last year, there was attempts to have it flown on flagpole at the town recycling center, and those were objected to, and so the flag was taken down. And then, after that occurred, there was a state representative race down here in our area, and there was a candidate who used the thin blue line flag in rallies and things as part of her campaign. She didn't win. She's on the school committee as well. So there's a little bit of background about the thin blue line flag being a touchy subject in Halifax.
So I guess my question is can't both flags exist? I mean, is there any opposition to having both flags in the classroom? I have to ask that. I mean, because everybody's going to show up with a flag, is there inclusion to have everybody's flag, or is it a matter of just having one particular flag? What do you think, Jay?
So personally, I think both can be hung. I think the fact that it's a school building and the thin blue line flag is inherently a political flag makes it a bit more of an issue, especially since it was taken down at the highway department because it was a political flag, and those can't be on, government funded properties, I believe. So personally, I guess they could both be hung, but it's a matter of, what does each flag represent?
I would say, and this is coming from it as an outsider point of view, if we look at what took place with George Floyd, the Black Lives Matter rallies, some folks could equate your flag to being a part of that, part of the Black Lives Matter rallies that took place last year. And that was somewhat political in nature as well. Would anybody here agree or disagree? Now, again, I understand the idea behind the flag itself.
Right. But again, yeah, I would. Sorry, Kevin, go ahead.
You would disagree?
I would disagree. Yeah. So the peace flag is not political because it does not advocate for any support for a particular group with legislation or political or public funding or anything of that nature. It is not a flag that is saying we should favor this group for this particular reason with public funds. It's not there's no political party that's associated with it. There's no, it's just not a political cause that it's fighting. Whereas with the thin blue line flag, it actually, there's a couple things with that flag that make it political. First, it uses a government flag. It's the U.S. flag that's turned all blue and white, and they have a blue stripe down. It actually violates the U.S. flag code, from what I understand, to modify the flag of the U.S. government in that way. But it's intrinsically political in its design. it's a government, it's an altered government flag. And then secondly, it's asking for support for a group of people. Now, I have enormous respect for police officers. I love what they do. They, and for the risks they take to keep us all safe. And that's what's ironic, is that the police are about peace, and so is this peace flag. But there is a difference in that the thin blue line flag, it's just inherently political. Whereas the peace flag, I think if you're going to take it, I think you take both of their most simple message, right? The thin blue line flag supports police. Well, by supporting police, it's political because it's supporting a group of publicly funded employees. The peace flag, at its most simple point level, is love and inclusion and peace for everyone. And so it's just not political.
I think a part of me feels as though you might be disingenuous with that comment. And I'll tell you why. Does it not favor, or is it not more of a representation of the LGBTQ community?
Sure. Yeah. But you see LGBT, the traditional LGBT rainbow flag is proudly displayed by politicians in both parties. It doesn't, there are a lot of very pro-LGBT Republicans and pro-LGBT Democrats. The rainbow flag really has come at its base level to represent love and inclusion of LGBT people.
Right.
And pride for their identities rather than shame in their identities,
I wouldn't disagree with that at all, but it still has a little bit of a political connotation, because you have a group of people who are fighting for to be included and for inclusion. Am I correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, when we talk about political, you think what's in the curriculum actually is political in many ways. We teach our kids about the Constitution. That's an inherently political document.
Right.
We teach them about human rights. That's political. It is. But there are some things that are political that are important enough and so universally accepted that they deserve to be taught in school. And this is actually part of the curriculum. They have a social and emotional learning component to the school curriculum that includes diversity and talking about inclusion, acceptance of everyone, including people of all sexual orientations and genders and everything else. So, I mean, it's part of the curriculum. Sure, you could say it's political, but it doesn't favor a group. And it's basically a visual aid that the teachers use to back up the curriculum they were already teaching.
Again, if you're tuned in, to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. And we're talking about the controversy that took place in the town of Halifax in regards to being able to have these flags hung up in the elementary school. And joining us to talk about this is a group of parents and residents and students, as you just heard Evan Smith, who had a student who was in the school system. We have Lana Eldridge, whose son, I believe, actually started and created a petition. We'll talk about that in just a moment. And Jay Klein, who is a senior, who actually organized standouts. And we'll talk about that in just a moment as well, Jay. Lana, talk to us about Charlie creating and circulating a petition that was well received. What was that like?
It's been wonderful, to be honest with you. The first day that we had the conversation about it, we're actually on the way to school. And I mean, Halifax itself is not a huge town. So our ride to school is probably about 8 minutes long. So Charlie and I were in the car and he simply asked, "Mom, what can I do to help this? I want to help my teachers. I want to get this flag hung back up. What can we do?" So I said, "You know, what do you think, bud? You know, maybe a petition, maybe you can help, you know, talk to the other kids to see what they think." And he said, "Yeah, I think I want to do a petition." So we went into school that day and approached his homeroom teacher and said, "I would really like to do the petition to show you guys that we want the flag hung back up as well." So this was very early on. So, you know, his teacher respectfully said, "Let's just see how it goes and we'll let you know." So he came home and we got to talking, and that night I said, "Well, since we can't do anything inside of school right now, why don't we start outside of school?" So we started an online petition at change.org, and to date, so it's probably been about maybe a little over a month, the signature has gotten over 6,000 signatures. So, and it's not specifically residents of Halifax. It's all over the world, to be honest with you, of people from Ireland who have signed it, Australia who have signed it, just to show support for this very, very important conversation. So maybe 2 weeks ago, I believe it was the week before school vacation, Charlie finally got the go-ahead to have his petition signed by students. And he got almost 50 signatures for only being in school for two days a week. And we had a friend of ours, the Laws, their son, Graham, also brought it in for the sixth graders to sign. So over 50 students signed their paper petition to have the flag hung back up in the fifth and sixth grade classrooms at the least.
And how is this document, how is this received by school officials or even the school committee? Was it recognized as people were speaking about this particular flag and wanting it to be restored in classrooms?
It wasn't even addressed, to be honest with you. We sent a copy of the documents to the school committee and to the school administration, and we never heard back from them. There was no acknowledgement of the petitions. There was no acknowledgement of receipt of the petitions. There was really no acknowledgement of any of the efforts that we've been going through to get these flags hung back up.
Jay, Evan, your thoughts? I mean, that, you know, even the school officials didn't even recognize this particular document. How does that make you feel? We'll go Jay. What's your thoughts? That it wasn't even at least mentioned that, you know, we see that folks want it, you know, are concerned about this, and we recognize this document. How does that make you feel?
It's really upsetting, to be honest, as someone who's a part of the district and as someone who has these school officials making decisions for me every single day in this school building. It's really upsetting to hear that they can't even acknowledge that we're trying to use our voices and trying to get them to hear what we have to say, and they're just ignoring us in a way.
Hey, or a resident, how does that make you feel knowing that there was a petition circulated, but yet it wasn't something that was part of the open meeting record when they met last week?
Yeah, it is very troubling. You know, we were hoping that at that school committee meeting, that time would be taken to explain the issue more than they had. The committee members didn't really even talk about it much. They had an open meeting, they had a public speaking section where there were seven people that were given 3 minutes to speak. I made some remarks. Other people on the other side of the issue and some of the teachers made some remarks, but the school committee never talked about their deliberations. And they had us on hold for 45 minutes. They started the meeting, did some business, went into a private executive session for 45 minutes where the rest of us, there was almost 200 people on the Zoom call, were waiting. And then they came back and just kind of read their decision. They did say in their statement when they made their decision public, they didn't say how people voted, even though I asked in my remarks for us to understand how each committee member voted on this issue. But they did say in their remarks that they were going to have it be under further review. They were going to continue reviewing the issue. So we actually have had some reach out from the superintendent committee and the school. So I expect there will be ongoing dialogue on this, but it is very disappointing that there wasn't at least a reference to the fact that there was this petition that had been circulated by students and that the students wanted the flag up in class.
We'll come back to the school committee because I think we should drill down into that conversation, what took place, and get everybody's take. I'm sure everybody here was on that call and witnessed it, and we'll have their feeling as to you know, what took place and transpired. Jay, I mean, you worked to organize standouts to protest the removal of the flag. What was that like to be able to do that? Did you feel that people came to the call? What was it like to be in the middle of organizing and then having these actual standouts prior to the school committee?
So I personally am a big fan of standouts, of protests. I like being able to use my voice and use my person as a way of showing support for a cause. So I've been to other protests unrelated, and I thought, you know, having a standout as a response to this would be a really good idea. So I organized it. I talked to the chief of police, and I've been keeping in contact with him every week that we've been doing this. He's on board with us having them. He has driven by a couple of times and said, like, thank you for letting me know. Thank you for organizing all those fun things. I think we've gotten a lot of support in person. Right now it's really cold, so it does make it a little difficult. Not everyone wants to stand outside for 2 hours holding a cold metal pole with a flag on the end of it. I get that. But even those that don't stand out, that drive by, they've been so supportive. I love hearing all the honks and the give thumbs up, you know, if you don't want to honk. It's really cool to see.
Did you see the same people actually show up? I saw your, we'll come to you back to you in a minute, Evan. Did you have a chance to be on the call for the school committee, Jay?
I was not. I actually was in the middle of a meeting for the newspaper club at Silver Lake to talk about this issue, actually. Okay. So I wasn't able to attend the meeting, unfortunately.
Now, did you do a write-up for the school? Did you watch the school committee? I'm sure they replayed it on local cable, or you were able to watch it. Did you write something up on it?
No, I'm actually not in the newspaper club. They were interviewing me relating to this.
Okay.
I think they are going to mention it in their article. I think the article is coming out later this month. I'm not really sure, but it's like an in-school newspaper.
We go back to Evan. Evan, you wanted to follow up on something?
I just had the thought when Jay was speaking, just to recognize how awesome he's been and just coordinating all this stuff. Just his advocacy and his voice and what he's doing. And he has a great relationship with the police chief in our town. You know, he may not talk about that a lot, but he's got a very warm and kind, and the police chief's very supportive, which is really sad that this issue has, in some people's mind, it's like the peace flag versus a police flag, and it doesn't need to be that way. You know, my father-in-law was a cop, and I haven't heard from anyone on our side that we don't support the police. It's just that the rainbow flag that was up in class is really important for those LGBT kids who are in the class, and we know they're there. You know, my wife has had parents reach out talking about that privately with her. We know that there are kids in those classes who need that affirmation and that support. There's no cops. There's no students who are police in class. I will say that there's some children of police officers there, and we love them and love what they do, love what their parents are doing. But there's just a very distinct difference between the purpose of both the flags. So,
yeah, a quick follow-up question for you before I go to you, Lana. And that is, how important is it that our youth, seeing our youth, whether it's Jay or Charlie, being vocal, being heard at a young age, whether it's a fifth grader or a high school student?
I think it's critically important. It's amazing for them to be, because they're the ones who are being affected in all of this. You know, us adults are talking about this because we want to try to protect the kids. You know, I have strong feelings about protecting LGBT children, because they're very, very vulnerable, 4 to 5 times more likely to attempt suicide statistically. But you know, that being said, I'm still just, you know, an adult who goes to work, and I don't deal with this issue in the class like they are. So having them actually speak up on it is crucially important. And it's an amazing example. I was not this way when I was a kid. I tell you what, I admire, when I was a senior in high school, I wasn't thinking about the stuff that Jay is. So
what were you thinking about?
Girls and other things and having fun.
I'd like to get your take on the school committee meeting last week, whether it's the outcome or just the general nature of the conversation. How did you feel that the conversation, was it a robust, you know, dialogue going back and forth? Or did you feel that it was one of those agenda items that was addressed, minimized, they went into executive session as Evan described, and then came back with a decision?
Yeah, I don't even know that you could properly call it a conversation, which is, ironically enough, what the peace flag is supposed to be encouraging. You know, it was sort of, like you said, an agenda item that just sort of got ticked off. There were statements made, Evan included, a school committee member who is also a parent of a fifth grader and a sixth grader, I believe, who made a statement not as a school committee member, but as a parent. You know, and then there was a statement read by the teachers, but everything was a statement, statement, statement. Nothing was a conversation. There was no dialogue. There was no back and forth. You know, it was very disheartening. And it was quite frankly just a letdown, because I know that there were people who were really excited to hear this conversation and to sort of get a not even a resolution, but just some explanation. That's all we've ever wanted since the beginning of this, is to just sit down and have respectful conversations and dialogues. And as you know, Evan mentioned earlier, it's really turned into an us against them, which is so sad. I mean, the irony is not lost that we are fighting over a peace flag. Let's be honest here. So again, from the beginning, all we've ever asked for is just a simple conversation. I'm willing to hear both sides. And again, as Evan referenced, I have all the respect in the world for what police officers do. They put their lives on the line to protect us every single day. I'm not saying that because I want the peace flag hung that I don't support the police. So again, I would just wish that there was more conversations and you know, hopefully we're moving in a more conversational direction. But again, it remains to be seen.
Evan, you have a follow-up on this?
Yeah, just talking a little bit more about what was said in the committee meeting. You know, there were some comments made about the teachers and how they had acted inappropriately by putting the flags up. There was, you know, even that school committee member who was speaking as a parent, not as a committee member. I was frantically trying to cut down my remarks from about 6 minutes down to 3 minutes, because I was told that I was going to maybe have some more time, and then they announced it was 3 minutes. So I didn't listen precisely, but I understood. He said that the teachers had been bullying the kids with their ideas by putting up the flags. So that sort of rhetoric is really harmful to our community. Just the idea that the teachers are trying to impose something onto these kids because they have a political agenda. And that's absolutely not what the teachers did. They're just, again, reinforcing the curriculum with a visual aid. So it was disappointing.
You know, what's really cool is we actually have a student who is in this conversation. Maybe we can ask a student if he's ever felt bullied by teachers with their, you know, their ideas. And Jay, have you ever felt bullied by a teacher as to their ideals? Or do you feel that there's a good flowing conversation when you're speaking with educators?
Usually, yes, there is a very, very open conversation. It seems to be both sides. If we do ever have any type of political conversation, like, I mean, as a transgender student, LGBT youth has come up multiple times with my teachers, and they've all been very supportive. And I've never had like an argument with a teacher about that. But if other type of political things come up, I know in my percussion class, we used to have political conversations all the time, and we would see both sides. And it was just a way to have dialogue with an adult who was personally experiencing it, and it helped us have our have different views. But personally, no, I've never felt bullied by a teacher.
And again, it's a small sample size, but I thought, why not? I mean, let's ask Jay. I'm pretty sure that he would be honest and open if in fact he did feel that way. And I would believe it would be something that would be addressed. Lana, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, you know, some of the comments that we've been reading on social media or hearing from other people is that these are conversations that should be taking place at home, that school is not the place to have these conversations. And with all due respect, in a normal, typical school year, the kids are spending 6 hours a day, 5 days a week in these classrooms with these teachers. So I think it's important that whatever you're speaking about at home translates into the classroom, and you're getting education from both sides. I was a therapist for a lot of years with adolescent youth. And, you know, a lot of times it was, you know, I want to come out to my parents, but I'm nervous. I don't know that they're going to receive the information well. But typically teachers and therapists are the trusted adults in kids' lives. And kids don't always have that support at home that they truly need. So to be able to have, you know, a symbol of unity and inclusion and acceptance in those places where kids are spending the most time is of the utmost importance. It truly is.
Jay, did you want to follow up on that?
Yeah, so when I was in the elementary school, I was having a lot of bullying from students and identity issues of my own. And when I ended up going into the middle school, it became more of an accepted thing because, you know, we were all finding ourselves. It was that age and there were now multiple towns put together. And I did come out to a couple of teachers back then as trans. I only recently fully came out this past summer. So it's been a very long journey for me, but it was important that I had trusted adults that I could talk to in the school system where I spent most of my time.
Evan?
Yeah, my, my son, he's now, like I said, 21 years old, but he had some similar experiences going through Halifax Elementary School and middle school and high school. Around fifth or sixth grade is when these kids start realizing or coming to terms with being LGBT, like we all do when, you know, when puberty starts, you start to figure things out a little bit more about your sexuality and gender. And, he was very grateful to see the rainbow stickers that were in most of the classrooms at the middle school and high school, rainbow flag stickers. It's close to my heart because I, raised him in a conservative faith that taught him that, gay marriage is a sin, and that was hard for him. And I have had a change of heart completely myself and trying to make up for some of the harmful teachings that I did. But I know there are other kids in those classrooms who are experiencing the same thing he did, who come from families with well-meaning parents who just aren't very educated on what's healthy for LGBT folks and for their mental well-being. And so having, something in the classrooms is important for those kids to get that validation, not to contradict the parents, but because kids don't always get everything they need at home, whether it's school lunch sometimes. I mean, we feed some kids who aren't getting fed at home, right? There's some other principles and ideas that the kids just aren't getting the best messages from their parents. And I can say that as a parent who didn't give the best message to my kid.
But, what's fantastic about life, if I may say this, we're the three of us are parents, Lana and Evan, I'm a parent as well. We're always learning.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Life is about learning. Just because you finished with high school or college or you get a graduate's degree doesn't mean that you've stopped learning. And any mistakes that you've made doesn't mean that you can't learn from your mistakes. That's what, I'm not trying to get on a soapbox here, but a lot of times we sometimes as human beings, when we're interacting and talking with each other, don't realize that we're learning. We're trying to learn from each other and maybe past mistakes we've made and how we may have felt 10 years ago might differ quite a bit 10 years later because we've learned a few things, and life should be about acceptance, not necessarily about not giving folks the right respect or at least recognizing certain things about our life as we continue to move forward as a culture. I think it's important.
Absolutely.
And if you're just tuning in, you're tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. And we have a fantastic conversation going on here. How it began the beginning is because of a controversy over a flag being hung in a Halifax elementary school. The conversations that's been had. Joining us for the conversation, we have Jay Klein. He's a senior at Silver Lake High School. And we have a parent. We have Lena Eldridge, who is a fifth grade son, Charlie, put together a petition. And we have Evan. Evan is a resident, but a resident who has been vocal and who has participated in the conversation. He has had a child who's gone through the school. And we're talking about right now the school committee's decision and, what they made last week. And I believe a part of the conversation that they had something to do with policies regarding these flags. And please correct me if I'm wrong here. But when it was mentioned about the policies, did the principals, did the elementary school principal initially cite policy when removing it, or was the whole citing of policy about removing the flags and not going about it the right way to be able to hang those flags because of policy something that was addressed during the school committee meeting? Evan?
Yeah, there was brief mention about there not being proper protocol followed in the school committee meeting, but that idea actually first came up when an email was sent around by the superintendent in response to all of the feedback from parents that people were receiving. And in her email to parents, she said that it was that the teachers didn't follow proper protocol when they put up the flags. And then in a subsequent email, there was reference to a particular IMB policy, which I've read through. It's actually, sadly, in this context, a policy that's titled, the controversial policy for controversial teaching or teaching of controversial subjects, something like that. But it's a policy that specifically lays out what the teachers are supposed to do when they're teaching quote unquote controversial subjects. And, there's nothing in that policy that says that the teachers need to get pre-approval from the administration to display a banner or to decorate their room in a certain way. The only thing that requires pre-approval under that policy is to have a guest speaker come in and to talk about the issue. And if the policy says that anything that's quote unquote controversial needs to be consistent with curriculum, this obviously hanging the flag, we talked about that, it is. The message of the flag is 100% consistent with the curriculum. So there really was no policy that I can see that was violated. There has been reference, school committee some members of the school committee have told me that there's a town policy or a town ordinance that prohibits the flying of the hanging of any flag on municipal property that isn't a U.S. flag. But I, again, reading through that town rule or bylaw, whatever it's called, I don't see that there's any thing that would prohibit an individual teacher from hanging a flag in their classroom to support their lessons or a banner in their classrooms. I mean, it's the law or the town rule actually says no group or organization can hang a flag on a municipal building, but this isn't a flagpole that they're hanging it on, and it's no group or organization. It's individual teachers.
Lana?
Yeah, I just thought it is worth mentioning. So Halifax is part of a regional school district of Halifax, Kingston, and Plimpton. And I think that, again, it just needs to be mentioned that these flags are proudly hung up in the middle school and the high school. The teachers in both of those schools, neither schools required the teachers to ask permission first. Right. After this, I hate calling it a controversy, but after this issue was brought up in the elementary school, there were over 50 flags that were hung up between the middle school and the high school. So clearly this is an issue that the elementary school is bringing to the table. And, this district-wide policy that they are claiming it violates is really only being applied to the elementary school at this time.
And Jay, you wanted to weigh in on this as well, right?
Yeah, I did want to mention that there are peace flags hung at the high school. I have seen them in multiple classrooms that I'm in. I've heard that they're in the library. I've heard that they're in other classrooms that I'm not personally in. So having it be a district-wide policy issue, is they're not enforcing it if it really is an issue.
I've actually had three kids go through Silver Lake High School at this point, and we know some teachers. The teachers didn't ask for permission to hang the flags at the high school. So, at the committee, there was a public speaker who made that comment that that's the distinction, is that they got permission and the elementary school teachers didn't, but that's just not true.
So who would evaluate this a week later? Do you feel that this issue was handled fair and balanced? Was the conversation fair? Should there be more dialogue, or is that it? Evan?
Yeah, there should absolutely be more dialogue. And I am happy to know that that's going to happen. There's a meeting scheduled. There's going to continue to be a discussion on this. If we're unfortunately in the situation where the peace flag itself or the peace banner can't be redisplayed in the class, if we can work with them to get something else, that's the substantive equivalent of it, some sort of poster that the kids come up with on their own, and something that, shows acceptance and love for all races, cultures, sexual orientations, genders, everything. If the kids can do that, that might be a powerful experience for them to go through that sort of a collaborative process together, and the same sort of ideas can be reinforced. So yeah, the dialogue needs to continue for sure, and I'm glad it looks like it's going to.
Lana, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say, in the midst of all of this, I think the teachers are sort of the ones who have been bearing the brunt of all of this negativity and the controversy. And I just want to personally thank all of the teachers at Halifax Elementary School for standing up for what's right and standing up for our children, because that's what essentially they are doing. They're showing that their classroom is a place of acceptance, of welcoming, no matter what your skin color is, no matter what your gender is, no matter what your background is. It's a safe space. And that's the goal that they are trying to reach. And to be treated the way that they've been treated over the last month is just so disheartening and so saddening, because these people are the ones that we entrust our children's well-being to for so much of their lives. And, you know, to have them be almost scapegoated in this whole process has just been so sad and so upsetting as a parent, because I know how much they love our kids and I know how much they're trying to make school a safe place for them. So again, I just want to thank all of the teachers, not only at the elementary school, but within the district who are providing that for our children, regardless of whether this flag is hung up or not.
And if you're just tuning in, you're tuning in to Monday Night Talk. This is a special 1 hour segment we're having during the second hour of Monday Night Talk, heard here on 95.9 WATD, and we're talking about peace flags and being able to hang them in an elementary school classroom, and the outcome of a school committee meeting and residents and parents and students. Well, I have small sample sizes in Jay and Lana and Evan. They're here sharing their voice and kind enough to at least discuss this matter to you, the listener, here on 95.9 WATD. Evan, I believe that you, as Lana was finishing up, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I wanted to reinforce and just echo what she said about supporting the teachers and how it's sad that they've been maligned in this. But I want to even more so just reemphasize that this is about the kids' well-being. It's about these minority kids in the classroom not feeling like something that they're born with, whether it's their race or their sexual orientation, gender, whatever it might be, an innate characteristic they're born with is too controversial to have publicly supported with a banner in a classroom. That message to our kids, that something about who they are is controversial, is just incredibly damaging, and it needs to be corrected. Whether it's with the flags going back up or some other way, there has been damage caused to the learning environment of these students by the school and what they've done, and it needs to be fixed.
Jay, it appears as though you're in full agreement with what Mr. Smith is saying.
Yeah, I personally, if I had been in the elementary school as a questioning identity kid and seen these flags, that would have been awesome. I would have felt so great about that. And then seeing them being taken down would have given me immense just damage and mental issues, and more than I already have. And I do want to say, I do 100% support the teachers, high school, middle school, elementary school, all of the teachers. When I was going through the elementary school, were huge supports and backbones for me. When I was going through issues with students, the teachers were always there to support me. So I huge, huge thank you to all the teachers. And it's disgusting to see how some of these people are treating these teachers that are here for children, not for adults. They're here to teach the children.
Evan, you and I were kind of going back and forth earlier in regards to the political nature of the flags, whether it's the thin blue line or, the LGBTQ flag with a peace symbol, whether it's political in nature. I want to first at least thank, I don't want to say his name, but we'll just say his initials, MG, for helping kind of assemble this conversation, bringing it to my attention, saying, hey, you know, this might be a good conversation to have on your radio program. I said, okay. And he actually was kind enough to even give me some information, some background stuff. One of the things he actually gave me was about a race in Newton for city council, where there was a little bit of controversy. They were having a Zoom debate, and one of the candidates actually had that very peace flag up in the background, and it caused a little bit of controversy. Political in nature, it might have been. But there was an individual who objected to it being up. It's just interesting that flags are the source of our controversy at this particular time. People are upset about whether we can put a flag up, what type of flag we can put up. And people not understanding, as Jay was putting it, you know, this is something that he's dealt with, going through the process of, you know, realizing who he is and then seeing something that is a symbol of acceptance and seeing that everybody is universally accepting it. And then it goes from being universally accepted to being ripped down as though no. And so it's just interesting as I'm paraphrasing that. Am I accurate in my analysis here?
Yes. Yeah.
What would you say, Lana?
Oh gosh, there's so much to say. Part of the other part of the flag that I think I don't want to go without saying is that while it does represent, you know, genders, sexualities, it also represents skin tones and different ethnicities. You know, Halifax is a largely white town. So for people of color of different backgrounds to see, you know, maybe their skin tone represented in a place where it isn't always, I think goes to say, you know, goes to show that Halifax is trying to be an environment of inclusion, or that's what we're striving for. So again, maybe the child's not feeling that at home in their neighborhood, you know, whatever part of town they live in, but the elementary school is a place for them to come and to feel safe and to feel accepted, no matter what they look like. They're inherently born traits that they don't have a choice of. Like, this is how life is for them. And to have a place where they feel represented, to feel included, is so inherently important.
Evan?
Yeah, I 100% agree. And it is ironic that, you know, the typical LGBT rainbow flag is less inclusive than this peace flag, because the peace flag, like Lana says, it does have the skin tone colors on it as well. So it is not in favor of any particular group. This flag literally represents all of humanity, and it affirms each and every one of us for who we are. And for that to be politically marginalized, or to be turned into a political issue where someone feels politically marginalized because they can't hang up a flag that's not even the opposite of it. Like, the superintendent in her email said that it was a legal issue because it was an equal access matter, that you had to have equal opportunity for the opposite side of the discussion to be heard. And I really can't understand how support for the police is the opposite of this peace flag. I just don't see it.
Lana?
Yeah, I feel the need to mention one of the comments that Charlie, again, an almost 11-year-old, made is, "Mom, can't the thin blue line people see that there is a thin blue line on the peace flag?" You know, out of the mouths of babes, it comes down to that, on that, you know, on the level for a fifth and sixth grade child to look at the flag and be like, well, there is a blue line. It's very, you know, cut and dry for them that it's not one or the other. This rainbow peace flag is representative of humanity as we are people, that we are a community, we are a country, we are human beings. That's what this flag is aiming to represent, I believe.
So what more can be done in regards to this particular issue, Jay?
I mean, just showing support, whether it be online, in person at the standouts, signing the petition, or even just like hanging the flag outside of your house. Like, there is so many ways to show your support. You can order the flags online for free and they'll deliver them to your house. So it's just, you know, trying to show that, you know, you just try and show to the school committee and to the officials that we're not going to just be quiet and let this happen.
Mr. Smith?
Yeah, I would agree that getting the flags is a great way to show support. They're available for free if you Google Common Street Spiritual Center. They're the group that got the flags together. There's a non-denominational, just spiritual center in Natick. They created the flag. They'll send it to you for free. The other thing you could do is, you know, anyone listening who may be in a different school district, encourage your teachers and people, you know, your educators in your district to put the flags up. There was an interesting, I believe it was the Norton school superintendent, Norton district, sent out a tweet when this got in the news, because WBZ ran a news story on this a few weeks ago. She said, "I can't believe that peace is being politicized, and I'm going to hang up one of these flags in all my classrooms." And I, you know, why more districts that do that, that this will help if we can get more support in that way.
We just got a few minutes left before we wrap up the segment and we close out the show. Lonnie, you got a chance to also give your thoughts in regards to what more can be done in regards to this issue about being able to hang these flags up in the classrooms.
I just piggyback on what Jay said and what Evan said. Just visually show your support. If our voices aren't going to be heard, our actions can be seen. Hang the flags. Like Jay and Evan said, they're free. RainbowPeaceFlags.org will bring you to the Common Street website and you can order them there. I, in Halifax, have become a distributor of the flags. So if anyone wants to reach out, you can go through the Peace Flag website and they'll direct you to me. Or you can reach out to me on Facebook. My Facebook name is Lana Marie. And I would be happy to meet up with you, deliver flags, leave them in my mailbox for you to grab one. Let's just spread the word. Let's get these rainbow peace flags hung up so that when you're driving down the street or when kiddos are in the backseat of the car and they see, you know, going through different towns, that there is support for them out there.
Evan, I think you wanted to follow up.
Yeah, one more thought about what we can do. In May, there's an election coming up for Halifax School Committee and for the Silver Lake District School Committee. So if you're in Halifax and voting in that, that's a huge way we can help. And Plimpton and Kingston residents for the district election as well. So yeah, those school committee elections, very, very important to show up.
Whatever would you mean, Mr. Smith? Are you saying that you have a candidate in mind for office?
Yeah, we have a few...
That's your cue, Lana.
Yeah. We have a few people. I'm not running, but we have some people in town who have got involved because, not only because of this issue, there's a lot of reasons why we want to see a change. And there's a group of people in town who are going to be advocating and trying to see that happen at the ballot box.
Selfridge, would you like to chime in?
Sure. Yeah. So I am officially throwing my hat in the ring to sit on the school committee.
I was going to say something, but I didn't want to steal your thunder, Lana. So,
oh, that's fine. Steal away, Evan. Steal away. This is pretty new for me. I've never run for anything. I have always coined myself as being an athlete. So I love a good competition. But ultimately this is getting some other voices heard other than what we've been hearing on the school committee, a little bit of, diversity in terms of beliefs and thinking. And I think it's just time for a change. And I know that, I'm not taking away from the current school committee because I, running for, office and being the voice of a town, is a lot of work. Never going to please everybody. I'm not going into this thinking that I'm changing the world. I would just like there to be some other sides of the coin to be seen and to be heard and hopefully, get a better representation of different groups in the town.
And it's worth noting that this isn't just pure rhetoric, that actually Alana actually has her signatures. So it's a bona fide race for school committee. I congratulate you for grabbing the mantle and wanting to get involved, win, lose, or draw. That's what, democracy is about, is getting involved, having your voice heard, regardless of what side you're on, making sure that you're the best representation, whatever committee or board that you sit on. That's very important. And congratulations to you for, feel motivated to do that. And who knows,
Thank you.
maybe Jay will pull papers and run. I don't know if a high school student can run, but wouldn't that be spectacular? How many do we know how many seats are open or up for grabs for this particular election?
I don't know exactly. There's been a lot of talk about everything. I do believe that there's 3 available seats up for re-election on the elementary school committee. And then at the regional level in the middle school, high school committees, I do believe that there's either 2 or 3 seats up for election.
Fantastic. Well, good luck on your race. As we wrap up here, I want to thank all 3 of you for being part of this conversation, hour-long conversation on Monday Night Talk. That's what the idea of this program is to talk with folks, be the voice for folks to be able to hear, to know what's going on in different communities, whether it's Hingham, Weymouth, Braintree, down to Plymouth and Duxbury, to maybe Brockton, Whitman, and Halifax, where the voice of the South Shore. And that's the idea, is to get the word out and try to be as fair as possible. So, again, best of luck. If there's any updates, Evan, Lana, and Jay, maybe we'll have to reconvene our little Monday Night Talk committee here and discuss. And if you're tuning in, thank you very much for tuning in to this radio program, this station. That's it. Until next week at 6:15 p.m. Have yourself a great night.